This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Dan Olmsted is a UPI reporter and arguably the nation's best reporter when it comes to covering the autism epidemic. He joins us on the long line from his office in Washington. Is that where you are, Dan?
Well, I'm at my home in Virginia, in Falls Church.
Oh, so well, there you go.
If you're barking in the background, you'll know that it's Dot.
Thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us this afternoon, Dan.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And let's get right to the chase. I'm just curious, how did a UPI reporter with no children with autism, no nephew or niece,
right.
How did you become and get interested first in this story, this national epidemic of autism?
Well, I actually had a kind of an indirect route where I had been doing some reporting for 2 or 3 years at UPI about an anti-malaria drug called Lariam, L-A-R-I-A-M, which is very effective at preventing and treating malaria, but it turned out to have quite a few side effects that people didn't really know about, including the fact that it could cause suicide and even homicidal behavior. There were some murder-suicides at Fort Bragg that I wrote about, and really became concerned that sometimes some of the drugs that are prescribed to people and that are recommended by the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, while a very effective, sometimes can have unforeseen problems, and sometimes those don't get as much attention as I think they ought to in a society that depends on people being informed and making their own decisions. And began to look at that issue as it pertained to the vaccine schedule for children in this country. There was a lot of debate, and is obviously, about whether vaccinations play any role in this huge increase in autism cases in the past couple of decades. And you know, I just have tried to look at that through the lens of balanced reporting on both the value and the potential problems of any prescription medication, and vaccines are prescription drugs before they're anything else.
And, of course, we should point out for folks who don't know, beginning in the late 80s, back in the 80s when autism was like, you know, one in roughly 10,000 kids, throughout the 90s and the early 2000s, autism went up 1,000% in this country, to the extent now where you have one in about 160 children, that's about one in 80 boys, who are now diagnosed with autism in our country. And, of course, ADD and ADHD are, of course, on the fringe there, not officially a diagnosis of autism, but
right.
Have many of the functional symptoms of autism.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the questions has been whether this increase has just been a better diagnosis. In fact, the CDC says they don't really know whether there's been an actual increase in the number of cases. I would say, based on my reporting, it has increased dramatically. Some portion of it might be better diagnosis, but I don't think so. I don't think very much of it is. I was out in Washington State doing some reporting earlier this year, and I had lunch with a couple of developmental therapists who really don't have any particular axe to grind on this whole issue, and they both told me that when they got into this business about 10 or 12 years ago in the early to mid-90s, they each had a class of about 30 kids with developmental issues, you know, language delays and other disorders, and that they each had like one kid with autism in their class of 30. Now they have 15 kids with autism. And there is no good explanation for that, because they knew what autism was back when they first started. There was no change in the pool of kids they were drawing from, and all of a sudden, every other kid has autism. So you hear enough stories like that, and you go, what is going on here? And you begin to believe that it's something very real and very disturbing.
UPI reporter Dan Olmsted is our guest, arguably the nation's top reporter when it comes to understanding the epidemic of autism in our country and in the world. So, Dan, what is going on? You've been writing about this for years. What's happening? What has happened to our kids?
Well, I don't know for sure, and no one does. I do think that if you start with the premise that there has been a genuine increase over the last 20 years, then you can't say that it's solely a genetic disorder. Something has to be affecting these kids in a way that it wasn't before. And the paradigm I've sort of come up with in my head is I see signs of some kind of harmful exposure in susceptible kids that is causing a lot of these cases of autism. And I don't just come up with that because I, you know, have decided that the mercury in vaccines causes autism. You know, I am not a scientist. I can't say that. But I have tried to begin at the beginning, so to speak, and look at the autism literature, really, that started in the 1940s, and look at what kinds of kids from what kinds of families were being diagnosed with autism and how that's grown and changed. And I think you can see from the very beginning that there's quite a strong probability that these something bad began happening that was affecting these kids.
And from the work that you've done and all the, you know, the thousands of interviews you've done over the years, do you believe that the mercury in vaccines does have something to do, or let me put it this way, is there evidence, probable evidence, to say that the mercury in vaccines does in fact have something to do with autism and the spike in autism in the last 15 or 20 years?
Well, you know, David Kirby wrote a wonderful book that looked at this issue, and I think if you're going to call me the best, you'd have to share that title with him, certainly. He's really raised this issue to the forefront and makes a very compelling case. And so I think there's reason to be very concerned that mercury, which is a known neurotoxin and has caused plenty of problems in other situations, was a bad thing to have in an increasing number of vaccines. But I think, on the other hand, since we really don't even have the studies that show whether there's a higher incidence of autism in kids who are vaccinated versus kids who are never vaccinated, it's really hard to say, well, this particular aspect of this particular vaccine, you know, almost certainly has done the damage here. I think, you know, we just have such little research and commitment of funds to figure this out that, you know, we're making the best we can of the evidence that we have at hand. But I think mercury looks suspicious, fits with the increase, and may well be a factor in an overwhelming percentage of these cases.
UPI reporter Dan Olmsted is our guest this hour on Charlottesville Right Now. We invite you to join the conversation at 977-1070. Lee, hang on with me, my friend. We're going to take a very quick break. This is Charlottesville Right Now. We're talking with UPI reporter Dan Olmsted. Dan has written dozens of articles about the autism epidemic, trying to make sense. He has talked to, Dan, you've talked to just about everybody, parents, doctors, scientists, folks in the government, lawyers, you name it.
I think I have. Probably the government's the least I've talked to, because they tend to not want to, you know, converse too much about this outside of pretty controlled setting like news conferences and that sort of thing.
Yeah. We've got a call. Lee is on the phone from Charlottesville. Lee, thank you for the call. You're on with Dan Olmsted. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, along with mercury, I know that every time I hear reports on autism, it seems to be always linked to mercury. But has there been any studies done to correlate whether or not it's a possibility that after the 40s, through the 50s, and certainly through the 60s, what you're seeing with the effect of the illicit use of drugs in the parents as they're young? I mean, is there a possibility that, you know, LSD, heroin, you name it, is potentially creating, along with the mercury maybe, augmenting these genetic defects? I just wondered if there's been any type of correlation associated with that. Thanks.
Lee, thanks for the call. Dan?
You know, I don't think a study like that has been done. I think it would be very interesting. The idea that some kind of genetic damage in the parents could be at work here is a significant possibility. I've just been writing in the last few articles about a chemical connection that some researchers have been writing about really since the 70s and 80s that's been kind of overlooked. One example is that some researchers found that parents of autistic kids tended to have chemical exposures more often than parents of kids who were not autistic, that they, you know, were chemists themselves, or, you know, in one case somebody was a roofer who worked with roofing tar, which is known to have bad things in it. I think that, you know, if vaccines or the mercury in vaccines turns out to be a major player, it could be the tip of an iceberg that reflected other harmful exposures, such as chemicals. You know, who knows about genetic damage from you know, recreational drugs. I think that there's just not a lot of good evidence that that is the case. So I don't think it's the likeliest scenario, but I would not rule it out. I would say we should spend another $1 billion as fast as we could on all kinds of environmental and, you know, harmful exposures that might be linked here, so we can figure out what's going on and try to treat these kids.
Dan, we interviewed David Kirby on this program a few months back. Of course, his book is Evidence of Harm. And Dave said something really, really thoughtful, I thought. He said, you know, if we've got one in 160, 150, whatever it is, kids who have succumbed to autism, and yet we don't hear, if there was one in 150 kids who was being kidnapped, the president would be on the TV every night saying, we are putting every resource of the government behind this. We are going to find out what has happened to these children. And yet that's not happening in our government. They're very rarely even discussing it.
That's true. And, you know, I think some parents have said to me that, you know, the most severely autistic kids, you just don't see out and about as much as you might see a retarded child, you know, in a school setting or that sort of thing, because they're hard to control, and, you know, they're just not going to be as evident. And I think it's kind of a hidden epidemic in a way, and one that is easy to ignore. And when you can talk about something more, I don't know if you want to use the word socially acceptable, but, you know, childhood cancer or something, when everyone can agree, is a terrible thing that we should figure out how to treat as soon as possible. With autism, you've got the possibility that it's something man-made and even government-made that has led to a huge increase here. And so, you know, the incentives to talk about it are not that great.
Dan, what do you think most people would be most surprised to learn about autism that you have learned over the last few years covering this incredible story?
Well, I think the idea that it can be treated is something that people don't realize. I think that, you know, there is an increasing body of work by alternative researchers and doctors that suggest that what they call biomedical interventions, which range everything from certain kinds of diets, you may know, you know, a lot about this, but methyl B12 injections, a very controversial procedure called chelation, where you do attempt to get rid of heavy metals, including mercury, on the theory that that's what's going on. You know, these things appear to work, you know, for some percentage of these kids, and I certainly can't say what percentage it is, and I don't think there's, you know, again, this is where, you know, thorough science has really not been done and ought to be, but I've seen enough and heard enough that I think something good is happening here, and this is not a lifetime gene-based affliction in many cases, and these kids need to be gotten to early, and this message needs to be out there, and there needs to be a recognition that there's help.
And, of course, what you just said goes in direct contrast to the American Academy of Pediatrics, the CDC, and the Institute of Medicine, who insist that this is strictly some rare genetic brain disorder that no one understands and can't really be treated.
That's right. I disagree with that.
We're talking with UPI reporter Dan Olmsted here on Charlottesville right now. We'll take a break for some local news here at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back with your calls, comments, and questions at 977-1070. This is News Radio 1070, WINA. UPI reporter Dan Olmsted has been one of the top reporters in the nation investigating the autism epidemic. He joins us on the line from his home in Northern Virginia. Dan, didn't you have a case up there recently where I remember seeing something about it on one of the, you know, these chat rooms that my wife and I read about autism families, a really tragic case that involved an autistic child and the dad, and Does that ring a bell?
It does indeed. That was not far from where I live. A very prominent lawyer who had served in the Bush administration killed his son, his 12-year-old son, and then killed himself. And I believe there had been an argument with his wife, and she had run out of the house and summoned police, and they came and really had no chance to prevent it. So it was horrifying, and unfortunately, these kinds of situations, you see them every few weeks, where a parent has snapped, and there was a case in Illinois where a woman, a doctor, killed her child. She's charged with murder. There have been murder-suicides. It can be a burden that people just cannot bear.
Yeah, it is. I can tell you, it devastates families. It's enormously stressful to watch your child to go through this kind of thing. And what alarms me personally is the amount of cases you hear where these kids, children with autism, and of course it's a spectrum disorder. It's like heart disease. You can have it really bad or you can barely have it. And so you can't say that a kid with autism is going to do X. You just don't know. But it is very common that a lot of these kids like to just sort of wander. They get out of the house and they start going for a walk and they don't know where they are and they just keep walking. And a lot of them, very common to hear cases of kids with autism that drown or that end up standing in the middle of the highway and just don't know where they are.
Right. And I thought it was telling that this child, who died at his father's hands here, was 12 years old, and I think, you know, on the cusp probably of adolescence, and I think perhaps, you know, hormonal changes, which are, you know, taxing to any child in any family, can perhaps trigger sort of distortions when it comes to autism that really add to the burden.
Good friend of the program, George from Fluvanna, is online, too. George, welcome to the conversation, my friend.
Yeah, hi. I'll overlook the fact that I've been diagnosed with autism by a school teacher who, after all, they're the ones that do it. But I have two basic questions. Am I correct that this seems to be basically a WASP disease and clusters in areas that have a high-techie population like Silicon Valley, and the high-techie population must have been there for at least two generations? That's question one. The second question is, isn't mercury today, or even at the time, really an arbitrary preservative which is put in the medicines to allow multiple injections from the same vial, and if you don't want it, you don't have to have it. You can get a separate vial that's all sterile.
George, thanks for the questions. Dan?
About mercury, yes. In fact, it's mostly been phased out. It's in some multiple dose flu vaccines now, which if I were a parent, I would certainly not want my child to get. I would insist on a non-mercury containing single shot, and I would read the label to make sure. Regarding the issue of the WASPs and the sort of techie, that's been called the geek effect and that sort of thing, that, you know, I don't know how to judge that, but I think that over time that tends to fade out, that association, and you start to see it occur pretty much across the spectrum of families. I think, you know, in the third world now, we're seeing a huge increase in autism, and that suggests that some aspect of modern life and industrialization is, I think, a more important factor than any connection with the kinds of, you know, intelligence or aptitudes that particular parents have.
And, of course, the reporter David Kirby has written that autism was virtually unheard of in China until
right.
they started importing Western vaccines.
Right. I've heard that many times. And, again, I think that would be something that we would want an urgent comparative study on, is let's take a look here. And, you know, is it an association with some aspect of medical treatment? Is, you know, is it vaccines, is it antibiotics, is it sonograms? I mean, where, you know, when you first start to see a disorder arise is when you can really kind of trap it in a sense and say, you know, these are the people who are getting it, and this is what they've been doing. And that's why, I went back and looked at the early cases because I think you can see very strongly not only an association with, yes, you know, talented, intelligent families, but in a lot of cases it was the parents' occupation in chemistry or plant pathology or being a mining engineer or the location of a child in an area with a lot of heavy use of fungicides. So I think this can be solved, but it's going to take the willingness of people to really just look honestly at what's in front of them and just accept the consequences.
And are they doing that? Because I know here in Virginia, efforts by some parents groups and church groups to even get a study done at the state level, the Virginia General Assembly has looked the other way and said, no, we're not going to fund anything like that.
I know that in the U.S. Congress, there's a combating autism bill right now that has passed the Senate and is in the House, and it does include, I think, like $45 million to look at possible environmental factors of autism, and that's sort of a code word that includes vaccines. You know, environmental meaning something from the outside coming in that's affecting these kids and causing a developmental disorder that in the most severe cases manifests as autism. I think it's going to be a real significant moment, whether that passes or not. And there's a couple of other bills, one that was prompted by some of my reporting to look at the autism rate in never vaccinated kids like the Amish and see, you know, let's just check it out. I mean, if the autism rate in kids who've been fully vaccinated is no greater than the rate in kids who've never had a vaccine in their life, I think we can probably rule vaccines out, but let's get it done.
Tell us about that reporting, because that was a truly original and breaking reporting that you did. Incredibly inventive, an idea to go to the Amish communities and say, well, let me look at this. Tell us about that, the work that
right.
you did there.
Well, really when I started getting interested in this, the first question I had for some of the parents who are concerned about vaccines was, you know, well, what is the autism rate in never vaccinated populations? Because that'll tell us. And they said, well, there's never been a study like that. And I was really quite dumbfounded because you can do it. I mean, there are tens of thousands of never vaccinated kids in this country because you've got religious groups like the Amish, you've got homeschooled kids, you've got parents with philosophical or health objections. And, you know, depending on your state, you can opt out of the vaccine schedule. And so I went up to Lancaster, it's not that far a drive from here, in Pennsylvania, Dutch country, tried to find Amish kids with autism and really couldn't. And beyond that, was also told by a number of the local doctors and families that there really were none or almost none, which of course is not scientific and needs to be followed up on, but it was pretty revealing. And I also went out to Chicago to a medical practice out there that's very mainstream in terms of diversity of folks who live in the modern world in the city of Chicago, and they had thousands of never vaccinated kids because Illinois makes it easy to opt out of the vaccination schedule, and zero cases of autism, and that's pretty well documented. And that, I think, is kind of astonishing when you think about it.
Yeah.
What is that telling us?
Exactly. What is that telling us? And, of course, you know, Dan, this whole theory that the vaccine, that the mercury, this poison that has never been attested, attested by the FDA, that was put in vaccines, the idea that that has anything to do with autism has been poo-pooed by the American Academy of Pediatrics, by the CDC, by the Institute of Medicine. They dismiss this as a theory of the lunatic fringe or deluded parents, people with an axe to grind against the pharmaceutical companies. They have aggressively tried to demonize these groups who believe that there is science there to support this.
Well, I think it's easy to be painted as anti-vaccine, and that's unfair because, you know, my interest is not in vaccines. It's in autism, and it's in, you know, public health, and I'm a reporter. And so I just would like to know whether there is something about the way vaccines have been formulated or the way that they're given or the total load of them that is got anything to do with this horrible epidemic with our kids. And, you know, I'm not out there saying, you know, get rid of the immunization schedule, you know, let polio run rampant, it's better than autism. I mean, this is a false issue, and no one should feel reticent about questioning, you know, public health policy. That's what we do in a democracy, and it's not the same as being a know-nothing who's against progress and against medical advancement at
and
all.
Course, that's what mainstream science does say. They say if you question any of this, mercury and vaccines or any of that, then you must be anti-vaccine. And what they don't realize, of course, is we got all our kids were vaccinated. We believe in the vaccine program, which is why our kids were vaccinated. My son got all the shots he was supposed to get.
Well, and the question is whether we are now vaccinating too heavily too early, Coy, because, you know, I wrote about some cases out in Olympia, Washington, where you have kids at 12 months of age who now get the MMR shot, which is mumps, measles, rubella, and they've now added chickenpox into that very same shot, and they give it on the, 12-month well baby visit along with other vaccines at the same time. And, the question is whether chickenpox is such a threat to public health that it's worth taking perhaps the risk of overloading a kid's immune system and possibly causing something like autism. I mean, that's where the discussion is. We're not talking about, letting disease run rampant. This is just not the issue.
And we should point out that the decisions that are made about the shots that are required by our government, those decisions are heavily, very heavily influenced by the pharmaceutical lobby, which we folks may not know. There's more pharmaceutical lobbyists in Washington than there are lobbyists for defense contractors.
Right, and the decisions, of course, are ultimately agreed to by the CDC, and the CDC is the one that then, does the studies that show no connection with autism, and I'm sure they mean well. I would never suggest anything but their best intentions, but I think we need independent groups and scientists to look at this possible link, and that's one of the bills that's been introduced in the current session by Dave Weldon of Florida, who's a medical doctor in the U.S. House, is let's get somebody else to figure this out. And I just think that's so reasonable, and it's kind of shocking that it hasn't been done.
I think people underestimate the degree to which the CDC isn't biased. Infiltrated or isn't totally populated with people from the pharmaceutical industry.
Right, right. And again, their view is that, the best science proves that there's no association, which is, I'm sure, what they honestly believe. But let's double check, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, what's wrong with that?
Hey, Dan Olmstead, our guest. Dan, if you could have any interview with anybody about all of this, who would you want to interview?
Boy, I think I'd interview Mike Leavitt, who's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. I would just like to know why, mercury is still in flu shots that some children receive.
And pregnant women.
And pregnant women, exactly, which is probably even worse. And why they don't go immediately and investigate the autism rate in never vaccinated kids. And just hear what he has to say, because, I think he's a smart guy who's aware of these issues, and I know that some of his top aides have been talking pretty candidly with some of the folks who are concerned about vaccinations, and I would like to know what he honestly thinks.
If you could have access to any information, unfettered access, what would you like to look at? What documents would you like to see?
I would like to see how the rate of autism and neurodevelopmental disorders increases with the increase in vaccines and vaccinations of kids. There was a CDC study that purported to find no link, but then some of the groups that are concerned about it got Freedom of Information Act data that suggested it had been manipulated, and that, in fact, you could see a very significant rise in the rates of these disorders as kids got more vaccines at earlier ages. And so that raw data, which David Kirby has, pointed out, has been sort of disappeared on us, and the CDC seems to find a million reasons that we can't look at it. But, boy, I'll tell you, if we had some independent researchers on that, data, I think we'd quickly have an answer. And the answer might be there's no connection, but at the moment I don't think a lot of us trust that.
Before we say goodbye, Dan, I'm wondering, what do you think, what do you hope might come of your work? Because I have to tell you, I really admire, as the dad of a 4-year-old who every day fights this hideous condition, I admire what you have done over the years to try to get information out there to families like mine so that we are better educated about what autism, what it even is. What do you hope will come of your work?
Well, I would hope that we could answer definitively this question of what the autism rate is in kids who've never been vaccinated. Because then if there is no difference in that rate, we can take it off the table, we can quit talking about vaccines, we can start looking at other possible environmental issues. But until we get that settled, that very fundamental question, I just don't know how the government and the medical establishment can tell parents to quit worrying about it and go get their kids vaccinated.
UPI, Dan, reporter Dan Olmsted. Dan, do you have a website where folks can read your work?
Absolutely, upi.com. I'm always happy to get emails, and it's dolmsted, O-L-M-S-T-E-D, at upi.com.
Dan, thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. You're doing great work, and I think the local media and the alternative press are where it's at with this.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dan, so much. Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
UPI reporter Dan Olmsted. That's upi.com. Let's take a quick break. This is Charlottesville right now.